Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday with the playoffs looming in the NFL live in L.A. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, a must listen. If you gamble, play fantasy football, love your favorite team, want a little insight into the playoffs, Greg Cosell. In 1 hour from now, an NFL meat sandwich. Here we go. And Joy Taylor's joining me on the second day of 2020. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
You were in Vegas.
I was.
I was on a couch watching the Rose Bowl.
I was not on a couch. How is your resolution going?
Slightly broken, but my New Year's resolution, I do one every year. Only Joy and my wife know about it. And so far, a little slip-up, but I feel very good about what's happening.
It's a pretty standard resolution. It's advantageous of you. I will give you that.
Yes. All right. So let's get it together, Colin. All right. Nobody can figure out what the Cowboys are doing. Jason Garrett's been there. He has not been a disaster, by the way. He's won the division 3 times. It's like 20 games over 500, 13, 14 years with the Cowboys. Jerry loves him. Somebody in Garrett's family is running the scouting department for the Cowboys. He's part of the family. Jerry keeps interviewing him because he doesn't want to fire him, and he wants to find a place in the organization for him, and Cowboy fans are freaking out about Jason Garrett. Here's the reality with the Cowboys situation. I don't think this can even be argued. To validate Dak Prescott's contract, which is going to be $35 million a year or more, you have got to find somebody who elevates Dak Prescott. A good quarterback, but not a special quarterback talent. That's the game now. Garrett's not doing it. He maybe did it initially, but he's not doing it. And there's only two choices, Urban Meyer and Lincoln Riley. I'm told Urban Meyer would take the job despite always being viewed as a college coach. He's a great leader, remarkable eye for personnel, and he's made every quarterback he's ever had better. Tebow got drafted because of Urban Meyer. All right, the other one is Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. And there's a lot of people saying that's not going to happen. Lincoln Riley loves Oklahoma. There is something happening in the Big 12 that is a talking point among coaches. The Big 12, in order to win the Big 12, you have to be fast. It's not a size league. It's a speed league. It's spread offense. So the players you recruit to Oklahoma to beat the Big 12 do not work when you get to the playoff and have to face the size and strength of Clemson or LSU or Alabama or Auburn or Ohio State. Lincoln Riley's 33-3 against everybody else. In the playoff, he's 0-3, and it's not close. They don't even look like LSU. They don't even look like Alabama. They don't even look like Clemson. And you're not going to turn that around. Is Lincoln Riley saying, it's the reality. Culturally, this is the reality of my conference now. I've got to hire speed guys to win my conference. But then when we get to the Clemsons and the SEC, that conference is about strength because it's so physical. Because in the footprint of the SEC, you just have more great big bodies that'll play in the NFL. And I think Lincoln Riley would strongly consider taking the Cowboys job. I think these are the only two choices you can make. And this is a talking point among Big 12 coaches. What wins our league does not compete at the next level. And I think Lincoln Riley's really smart. Now, he's young, and he's going to get multiple offers. But the Cowboys are different. Urban Meyer sat on this couch, and he said, I never really had an interest in the NFL. But if the Dallas Cowboy calls, you take the call. And I think that's the reality with this job. Is Jerry Jones stalling? Many people suspect Jerry's stalling because he's trying to find a place for Jason Garrett. It should be noted that Bruce Feldman, a very good college football reporter, said this morning the Cleveland Browns, on a tweet, are very interested in Urban Meyer. Well, of course they are. They should be. But this tells you there is now Urban's name is surfacing for multiple, not college, NFL jobs. We've seen him at NFL stadiums. Urban Meyer is about to move, potentially. If he does leave Fox and television, my gut is the Cowboys are the destination. Only two ways. If you're going to pay Dak $38 million, two guys have a history of quarterbacks that play like Dak. Urban elevates all of them, and so far, Lincoln Riley's elevated two to three of them. Those are your guys. All right, let me shift to this. So I'm perusing the NFL final regular season standings, and I noticed something, is that you can lie in the NFL about almost everything. You can lie to yourself. You can lie to me, the media. You can lie to your staff. You can lie. There are two exceptions. So in seven of the eight divisions, the best quarterback head coaching combo won the division. There's only one exception, and it's not really an exception. It's Kyle Shanahan and Garoppolo. And, you know, you can make an argument that they're as good offensively or better than Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. I mean, you can make that argument. So let's just say I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I could make the argument 8 out of 8, best head coach quarterback combo wins the division. But I'll say 7 of 8. So what does that tell? Now, you can get the coach right and not the quarterback. Steelers had an injury. Chicago, Indianapolis. The coach is right. We don't have the right quarterback. You can get the quarterback right. Matt Ryan in Atlanta. I think Dak Prescott's won divisions. Dak Prescott in Dallas. But you don't have the coach right. Dan Quinn's not good enough to get past Sean Payton. Jason Garrett's good, but boy, he's not Doug Peterson. You got to get both right. The rest of this stuff is commentary. It's like a buddy of mine says about the Bible. Treat others like you'd like to be treated. The rest is commentary. Everything else is just treat people like you'd like to be treated. In the NFL, you can lie to me. You can lie to yourself. You can lie to your staff. You can lie about everything except two things. Head coach and quarterback. Don't get them right. Aren't honest, you're done. Chicago announced a couple days ago, we're sticking with Trubisky. Oh, that's cute. But you're not being honest with yourself. By the way, Tennessee was honest with themselves this year. Marcus Mariota, I know we picked him way up there. They went to Tannehill. Oh, Tennessee made the playoffs. Tampa Bay drafted Jameis Winston. They're not honest with themselves. We're going to give him one more year. For years and years, the Giants weren't honest with themselves with Eli Manning. The Chargers, I believe, are being honest with themselves about Phillip Rivers. By the way, Lamar Jackson's going to win the MVP. He did not start until week 11. And the Ravens said, Joe Flacco is just not good enough. Joe Flacco had won a Super Bowl. Joe Flacco was an MVP. He's like statue-worthy in Baltimore. But John Harbaugh and the ownership and the front office were honest about Joe Flacco. They're now favored to win the Super Bowl. Kansas City was making the playoffs with Alex Smith. They were making the playoffs. They were winning 9-10 games a year, hosting playoff games. And then Andy Reid had a sit down with his front office, and they were honest about Alex Smith. Now they have Patrick Mahomes, who was last year's MVP. You can lie to me and your fans. You can lie to yourself. It's almost like life. You can lie to everybody, but lie to your wife or lie to your boss. Divorce or fired is coming up. You can lie to everybody else. You can lie to your kids. Oh, yeah, there's Santa. Oh, yeah, I never smoked pot in college. Can't lie to your wife. Can't lie to your boss. Both are firing you. And in the NFL, Chicago, you can keep convincing yourself, but deep down you know the truth. You know the truth. In a division with Aaron Rodgers twice a year, not winning it. Not winning it anymore with Mitch Trubisky.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Anytime you're compared to somebody great, it's not a bad thing. In the early 90s, 1992, there was a basketball player at USC named Harold Miner. He was called Baby Jordan. He wore Michael Jordan's number. He won slam dunk contests. He was compared just enough to Michael Jordan, despite not really having a consistent jumper, despite having flaws in his game. He was compared enough to Michael Jordan that they called him Baby Jordan. And he got drafted number 12 and then disappeared because he really wasn't an NBA player. But the comparisons, you could see some. Trevor Lawrence is the next great college to pro NFL quarterback. He is great. He is a John Elway talent. And as Clemson was being outplayed for 3 hours, most of the 3 hours by Ohio State, tall, lean, lot of hair, smart, good arm, athletic Trevor Lawrence put Clemson on his shoulders and carried the Tigers over Ohio State. That big run down the sideline, that hair a flying, 6'6", thin, lean. Oh, he runs too? Boy, the NFL now really likes running quarterbacks with big arms who are pocket guys. As I watched the Rose Bowl last night, do you know what I saw? Justin Herbert looks a lot like Trevor Lawrence. Tall, lean, almost looks a little thin. Good arm, four-point student, an old Wisconsin dominated Oregon for 2 hours and 45 minutes. And then Justin Herbert put the ducks on his shoulders and made himself $40 million. He looks just close enough to Trevor Lawrence. Lean, good student, bunch of hair, athletic, runs in 2020. Carries a team. And by the way, Justin Herbert does not have Tua's help at Alabama or Joe Burrow's help at LSU or Trevor Lawrence's help at Clemson. He is not surrounded by five-star recruits. He went 32 touchdowns, five picks with Oregon athletes. And Oregon can recruit, but they don't have a single wide receiver, running back, or tight end who's a top 25 prospect at their position this year. They have a couple of offensive linemen that will get drafted on the second day of the draft, third or fourth round, maybe fifth. Being compared to somebody, looking sort of like somebody, having qualities kind of like a star, made baby Jordan Harold Miner a lot of money. And Herbert is a lot better prospect than Harold Miner was. Justin Herbert looks just enough like Trevor Lawrence. Style, arm, size, the ability to take over a game when outplayed, and he's done it at Oregon without Bama athletes, LSU receivers, Clemson running backs. He's got Oregon guys who are good, but not that level.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Well, it is a new year, and maybe finally Nick Wright will be nice to me and supportive of me, you know, because he comes on and he just doesn't believe anything I say. And he's my buddy via the Global Cowherd Global Satellite Network. Nick Wright, co-host, First Things First. Here's something we'll agree on. Dynasties usually, they're like the Spurs. They kind of whimper out. You respect them, but you don't fear them. And I think Duncan, Brady, Spurs, Patriots, it's over. I'm okay with that, although I do think they beat Tennessee because they're crazy town. Nobody trusts Tennessee. Is that a fair way to look at the Patriots dynasty this morning? Happy New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year to you as well. And that is a very fair way to look at the Patriots dynasty. But I do find it very interesting. I mean, I hope you have not dislocated your shoulder from a moment ago patting yourself on the back for being so correct on the Browns, which you were right about. I just wish you could have joined me in calling this Patriot thing 3 months ago when you were still holding on hope. You needed to see them lose to the Dolphins the way I needed to see Baker throw 21 interceptions. That's fine. But let's just follow a different path for a moment on the Patriots, because then I think more people would believe what you begrudgingly believe and I've believed all year, which is it is over for them. And let's just for a moment pretend Dee Ford was not 2 inches offsides last year in the AFC Championship game. Then the storyline for Brady and the Pats would have gone as follows, and it would have made so much more sense. Down 28-3 in the Super Bowl, greatest comeback ever. Brady gets his fifth ring and breaks Montana's record. The following year, Brady's still awesome, wins league MVP, but the team is this close to a Super Bowl, loses it on Brady's fumble, doesn't get it. The next year, you get beaten in the AFC Championship game because you're a little bit worse. That's on Brady's what would have been his third pick of the game, by the way. And then this year, You're a shell of what you once were. You don't get a bye. It's the worst season you've had in a decade. That's how we're used to having a dynasty end.
Right.
The problem is last year when it should have ended, they won the damn Super Bowl anyway. So everyone's terrified of saying it's over for them. But it's over for them. It's clearly over for them. And I agree with you. I don't think they're going to lose to Tennessee either. And I'm going to say it again. I'm going to be furious if they lose to Tennessee because that will deprive my hometown Kansas City Chiefs of their rightful opportunity to be the team that ends it officially. So go beat the Titans, Patriots, then come to Kansas City and get your heads handed to you the way it's supposed to go so I can sleep for the first time in a year. Go ahead.
Fair enough. I've been a little more of a Dak Prescott fan than you. I think that's fair to say, but I do think there's a ceiling. Yep. I just love all the intangibles, and I think those matter a ton. By the way, Trubisky has intangibles, but I think Dak's a better thrower of the football than Mitch Trubisky, so I'm for him and not for Mitch. I think only two things make sense for the Cowboys. You got to sign a coach that makes the $35 million a Dak worth it. And there's two guys that have had Dak like players, Urban and Lincoln Riley. And they have taken guys who are Tebow, Jalen Hurts, not great throwers, and they've made them into unbelievable players. I think Urban and Lincoln Riley are the only two choices for Dallas. What say you?
I think it's a really interesting way to look at it. My problem and my concern would be what Urban and Lincoln Riley were able to do is surround those players who were great collegiate players with a bunch of five stars. And obviously you can't do that in the NFL because of the salary cap. And $35 million a year means you have to be the additive value of three Pro Bowl level players. Because $12 million a year gets you a Pro Bowl offensive lineman, as long as it's not a tackle, gets you a Pro Bowl corner, gets you a Pro Bowl wide receiver, whatever you want other than quarterback. So that's what you are losing. And to me, it's not that complicated on the quarterback stuff. And that is, the moment they sign the deal, does anyone think it's an overpay? And if the answer is yes, then it is. The moment Aaron Rodgers signed his deal, did anyone think it's an overpay? No. When Russell Wilson signed his, no. Drew Brees signed his, no. When Patrick Mahomes gets $200 million total in a few months, will anyone think it's an overpay? No. But when Cam got his, and I love Cam, did some people think it was an overpay? Yes. Matt Ryan, yes. Dalton, yes. Tannehill, yes. Stafford, yes. If anyone thinks it's too much, it's too much. You either know it, it's either immediately right or it's not. And this has just been what history's proven out. When Dak gets his deal, there's going to be some people that say, it's too much. You know what? Then it's going to be too much. And it's going to be very, very difficult, no matter who the coach is, to win that way.
Nick Wright, co-host, First Things First. Yesterday I was reading a terrific reporter, Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports, and he was detailing sort of the Rubik's Cube of the Cleveland Browns front office search. And it was dizzying. I'm reading this stuff and I'm thinking, this is not a well-run corporation. I'm hearing Urban. I'm hearing Josh McDaniel. I'm hearing all these names. This is not just about saving the Browns. It's saving Baker Mayfield. I mean, that's what it's really doing. This is a massive hire for Cleveland. Is there anybody that works?
Well, and the problem is at this point, when you say it's a massive hire, which position we talking about, GM or head coach? Because they're both vacant. I know Paul DePodesta looks like he's stepping into the GM void. I want to talk about the GM thing just for a moment because I think it's really important for Baker. Baker lost his rabbi in the organization in John Dorsey. Baker now is facing the fork in the road moment of his career. If he's bad in year three, the power structure there will have no loyalty to him. Won't be a head coach who he helped get the job, and it won't be a GM who spent the number one overall pick on him. So that's obviously critical. And how does Baker have a good year three? Head coach has to be an enormous part of it. Where you have been unquestionably correct on, we'll see if you end up being right that Baker's talent is not enough to overcome it. Right now you appear to be. But where you are already correct on, you have won the argument, is that Baker does not have the emotional maturity requisite to be the face of a franchise. So what you can't just say learn to be that. You have to remove that responsibility from him.
Yes.
I think Lamar has the emotional maturity,
yep.
But he's not asked to be. John Harbaugh is the face of that organization. My guy, Patrick Mahomes, I think he could be, but Andy Reid is the face of that organization. When Russell Wilson was learning, even though he's special, Pete Carroll was the voice and the face of that organization. So you must bring in someone who has the presence of personality, if you will, to where Baker's not the most powerful personality in the organization. Just go play quarterback, because that's something that you struggled with mightily on its own this year. That's the only way this thing gets fixed. The other problem for the Browns is this. Jimmy Haslam bought them in 2012. After this offseason, they will be on their sixth GM, their sixth head coach, and their 13th starting quarterback since Jimmy Haslam bought the team in 2012.
Wow.
That is 6 plus 6. 25 different head coach, quarterback, general managers since Obama's second term to now. That is no way to effectively run anything. And so everyone's fighting uphill there. The only solution might be for Paul DePodesta to hire you, Colin, because I think ultimately that would humble Baker more than anything, but I don't think they can afford you.
Oh, stop. Finally, listen, I don't mean to be an antagonist, but I have to bring up that the Clippers beat the Lakers again in the regular season, and I've said I think the Lakers are built to be better in the regular season, but man, I like the Clippers taking time off for the postseason. But the Clippers beat the Lakers again in the regular season. Was this difficult for you, knowing your affection and affinity for LeBron?
Well, by the way, it's a few days old, but I'm not sure if you did it. Before I answer the question, I would like to give you the opportunity to have wished LeBron and Tiger Woods, the two greatest athletes of the last 30 years, happy birthdays. They both had their birthday on December 30th. I don't know why that's on a national holiday at this point. You have Tiger and LeBron, it's their birthdays. I mean, we get the president's days off. We can't have the king and the goat day off. But regardless, to answer your question, no, it's not difficult for me. I know you live in L.A. I assume they still have sports sections out there, L.A. Times, great newspaper, where you can check the NBA standings. Because as I've been trying to tell you all year, you can talk about how the Clippers are built for the postseason, Lakers regular. The Lakers are still the one seed with a nice cushion. And I don't know if you've seen the 8 seed in the West as of late, but it's a team that, what is it right now? Is it Portland or did they fall out of it? It's a team that's 3 games below 500. If you get the 1 seed in the West this year, you essentially get a bye in the first round. Meanwhile, the Clippers, a team that desperately needs rest and recuperation, would prefer to play basketball on a football schedule. 1 game a week will do. They are in that muck where you are going to either play the Jazz or the Mavericks or the Rockets or the Nuggets in the first round of the playoffs.
Good point.
A 2-week war. And then another 2-week war against another one of those teams. While the Lakers are just skidding above the fray. Right now looking like you from your ski boat in Utah. Like, oh, looks dangerous down there. Not going there. And then if the Clippers get there, the Lakers will actually have been effectively rested in the most critical time, and the Clippers will not. With all that said, the Lakers can't beat the Clippers if LeBron plays poorly. He played poorly on Christmas. He played poorly the first game of the year. I do not think he will play poorly 4 times in 7 games in the playoffs, considering he's averaging 4 bad playoff games every 4 seasons over the last 15 years, so I'll take my chances with it.
Well, it's well thought out. He's given that some great thought, and I always appreciate it.
I'm right on this one.
Okay.
Where Nick was right, the Lakers are betting on LeBron. We'll find out soon.
My friend, my dear friend, the talented Nick Wright, Happy New Year to you and your amazing family.
Happy New Year to you guys as well. Happy New Year, Joey. Talk to you guys soon.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
You know, there's a lot of speculation about Josh McDaniels, who I think is sort of the Lane Kiffin of pro football. Coaches matter in football. People can overlook the flaws. Very high IQ. debatable EQ. Doesn't always play well with others. Some people have questioned, you know, he'll say one thing, do another. Definitely has his critics. Many people think he's arrogant and doesn't listen, stubborn, but the guy knows football. They both do. So there's a story here. The Browns are very interested, and Josh McDaniels wants to coach Baker Mayfield. Whatever. Here's what we know. Josh McDaniels is going to have a bunch of offers, and Bill Belichick ain't leaving soon. He's moving. And Tom Brady's getting old. So let's move this into Brady. Does Brady at 42 years old, 43 next year, want a new coordinator? Brady's frustrated working with new receivers. He wants a whole new system and a coach. He wants to spend the offseason as his kids now are starting to play sports, the supermodel wife, Costa Rica house. He wants to waste 7-8 weeks teaching a new guy a playbook. I just think you could make an argument he'd push back. Brady now is going to lose his offensive coordinator. He already lost Gronk. New England hasn't addressed that. He's struggling with young receivers. It generally takes 3 and 4 years for receivers to work in the system. These guys are going to be into year two next year. Belichick and him are not as tight as they once were. It's not as much mentor as kid. Tom's done having a mentor hover over him. Tom Brady structured his contract to be a free agent. He can go anywhere he wants. Oh, yeah, Tom Brady put his house up for sale. Oh, yeah, Tom Brady's trainer put his house up in Boston for sale. Oh, yeah, Tom's dad keeps saying he's going to play to 45. This is not going to end well in New England. He wants to play to 45. Oh, yeah, that's always been the number Tom said, 45. Oh, yeah, that means he's got 43 next year, 44 the following year, and 45. So even if he plays a third of that, he's playing next year. McDaniels is leaving. So you look at the NFL draft. It's a numbers game. It's math. Okay? 8 teams need quarterbacks. Cincinnati's going to take theirs out of college. The Miami Dolphins at 5 probably take a quarterback. And the Chargers at 6 probably take a quarterback. That leaves a lot of Carolina Panthers out there that need a quarterback. Let me throw out a team and a destination that I think fits for Brady. The Indianapolis Colts at 13. They're not going to be able to get Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields next year. Again, nobody's traded down for that. And they're too good to end up with a number 1, 2, or 3 pick next year. And they're not going to be able to leap ahead of teams this year. I don't believe they don't have enough elite players. They have terrific young players, and they're not giving up any of that O-line. So they can't leap above Carolina, the Chargers, the Dolphins, and the Bengals. They need to make a move. And think of what they have for Tom Brady. When Peyton Manning was a free agent and he was old and he'd been banged up, where did he go? To a team that had weapons and an offensive line and a structure he trusted. What do the Colts have? Maybe the best young general manager in the sport, Chris Ballard. What do they also have? A really good head coach, respected, played in the league. What do they also have? A top three offensive line who by next year, in my opinion, as the Cowboys line ages, will have the best offensive line. Tom won't get hit. What do they also have? A deep threat, T.Y. Hilton. What do they also have? About 28 tight ends. They got nothing but tight ends. Tom loves the tight end. What do they also have? They play indoors. What do they also have? A crappy winnable division with teams you can't trust, Houston and Tennessee, that Tom has owned. I'm just saying, the Colts, and what do they also have? A team that would drive Belichick nuts. Everything is lined up. Now, do I think it's better than 50-50 Tom leaves? I think Tom wants to stay. But I don't think some of this stuff, unless they decide to go get an Amari Cooper, pay Josh McDaniels even more money, $4 or $5 million to stay. But I can see Tom Brady looking at it and thinking, I lost Gronk, you haven't addressed it. Young receiver's driving me crazy. McDaniels is leaving. I can see it. There are Indianapolis needs a quarterback. Okay, they're acknowledging. Their GM had an hour meeting today with the media and largely acknowledged Andrew Luck's not coming back and we're not good enough at that position. I mean, Jacoby Brissett's fine, but Mahomes in AFC and Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson, and now you got your Josh Allens and your Darnolds and even Baker. You got a lot of talented guys in the AFC. And by the way, Cincinnati's going to get one. Now Miami's going to get a quarterback. Keep your eye on the Indianapolis Colts. They offer a lot of what Peyton Manning was attracted to. We thought Peyton Manning was going to be a Colt forever. Did we not? Joe Namath, Johnny Unitas, Joe Montana, Brett Favre. You guys all think these quarterbacks play forever. They want to keep playing. And when you're making $28, $30 million a year, by the way, the Colts have a young roster. Brady can come in there and make $30 million. They've got money for him. That offensive line's not getting paid yet. I mean, that defense is young. It's not getting paid yet. Colts have nothing but money in cap. They'll have cap space. Indoors, winnable division, good GM, smart coach, great O-line. I'm just saying the Colts, to me, make a lot of sense, and I don't think the Colts have the draft capital and the ability to jump ahead of the Chargers or Carolina or Miami, and they're not getting to Cincinnati's number one spot. I think it makes sense.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's go to Greg Cosell, 40 years NFL films. The most objective guy if you gamble, if you do fantasy sports, or you just love football. We're going to talk about all four playoff games this weekend. Greg Cosell, happy new – do you have any New Year's resolutions, Greg? More or less film study? What is it?
You know, I might like to relax a little more one of these years, Colin, but that doesn't seem to be in the in the plan.
Well, that's because you're wanted for your information. Let's start Buffalo at Houston.
Yeah.
When I watch Houston, my eyes tell me flawed, sometimes chaotic, make a lot of mistakes, don't love their clock management. But Deshaun Watson kind of flag footballs it and just wins games sometimes on the strength of his athleticism and ability. Do you see this Houston team, top to bottom, as a team that could win several playoff games?
Well, I think they've struggled a bit offensively, and I think over the last month, Colin, Watson has struggled. We lose sight of that because he's capable of the spectacular. And sometimes the spectacular can win games depending on the nature of your opponent. But he has not been playing particularly well. He's not really setting his feet. He's not planting with a firm base. He's dropping his eyes. He's not seeing things clearly. He's not playing with a real great sense of pocket discipline and awareness. He's too random. Now, you can make plays that way. He's capable of that. So now you're relying on other things with your team in order to win games. And if he does that this week, that may be enough because Buffalo is not a team that necessarily puts a lot of points on the board.
That said, Josh Allen's better than I thought he would be this early. What do you consider Josh Allen, Bills quarterback, at this point, Greg?
I think he improved incrementally this year. I still think that he misses too many routine throws, but he's making more of them than he did a year ago. Where he needs to really improve, because this is what they would like to do, is on the deeper throws. He hit that big one to John Brown versus
yep.
the Patriots, which was a great, great throw on a designed shot play. So they've gotten opportunities like that throughout the course of the season. He's missed far too many. If he can make a few of those, their offense might take on a different feel. They'd like to run the ball as their starting point. They're inconsistent doing that. Their O-line can be up and down. We have no idea what the impact of J.J. Watt will be, given that he's been away for so long. But I will say one thing from a tactical perspective. They have to decide – Buffalo, that is, of how they want to play personnel-wise. Because J.J. Watt plays different positions in the base defense and in their nickel defense, their sub-package defense. So they have to decide how they feel they can better attack that defensive line, whether they want to line up in base offense with two tight ends or a fullback, or whether they want to play with three wide receivers, because Watt, as I said, plays different positions.
Let's go to Tennessee at New England. You know, listen, in my talk show world, Brady's a topic. He's no good anymore. But do you see real erosion with some of his skills?
I do.
Okay,
I don't think that he's as consistently accurate as he was, and we used to take that for granted, how accurate he was. He did not miss throws. I don't think he's quite as consistently accurate. He's certainly not comfortable right now. This is an offense that's very limited with their pass game right now. They have very few intermediate and vertical throws. It's an offense that has to try to orchestrate and manufacture explosive plays. No team this season targeted running backs more than the Patriots, and that's for obvious reasons. And it's very difficult to build a pass game around that. So their pass game, therefore, is erratic, inconsistent. It's sometimes yes, sometimes no. and they've tried to go back to run the ball more, and that's why Alandon Roberts has played fullback, because they're trying to go back to the formula that drove them to the Super Bowl a year ago when they did have a fullback in Devlin, who they do not have now. So they're trying to create a semblance of a run game to be the driving force.
Tennessee's got some really interesting offensive pieces, but is the offense led by Tannehill, or is it actually led by running back Derrick Henry, in your opinion?
Well, structurally, it's built on Henry, because they're a team that lines up with multiple tight end sets. Their formations tend to be tighter, and it's built off Henry as a runner. And then Tannehill's pass game works off of that structurally. But Tannehill has thrown the ball extremely well, plus he has movement skills. And so right now Tannehill's playing at a high level, but they don't ask him to drop back that much depending on the game. You know, in an ideal world, he's had a number of games over the last month or so, Colin, where he's not dropped back 30 times.
Yeah.
And in the NFL, that's not a lot of dropbacks. So it's structurally built around Derrick Henry.
Yeah. I always thought Ryan, you watch Justin Herbert in the Rose Bowl and Trevor Lawrence, and you see that ability as a big guy to run. Ryan can move. I mean, he's got very well. Yeah, I mean, he's what NFL court teams are looking for today, a big guy who can throw it and move, and he really can sometimes. You know, he's an athlete. So let's go to Minnesota at the Saints. I'm not going to ask you to go back in your memory catalog 5, 6, 7 years, but boy, my eyes are telling me Drew Brees – His feet, his energy, this is the best I've seen from him, in my opinion, Greg, in several years. Now, am I going overboard here?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I think his movement has been really good. And I don't know if it's because he missed those games and maybe his legs got to be refreshed, because it wasn't a leg injury, obviously. But he's moving well. What I always thought was underrated and overlooked with Brees was how explosive his lower body movement was. He's not a runner like a Russell Wilson, but his ability to move within the pocket was really special. And I think he's doing that well, really well now. And I think they've added some weapons. You know, Taysom Hill, over the last four games, has played over 35% of the snaps as a receiver. And I don't think a lot of people are aware of that. So he's really become a wide receiver in the context of their offense. And Kamara, he got hurt a little bit and came back. And boy, does he look like he has a bounce in his step now. And he is a tough, tough matchup in the pass game, particularly when he lines up on the same side as Michael Thomas.
I love Minnesota's Dalvin Cook. Kirk Cousins doesn't do a thing for me. I'm sorry. Just doesn't. I mean, to me, if Cook doesn't play, they're cooked.
I mean, no pun intended.
Yeah, I mean, what are they if Dalvin Cook doesn't play?
Well, I think that there's no mystery to what they are offensively, whether it's Cook or any running back. I think their offense starts with the run game, and the pass game works off that. It's a play-action pass game. It's a boot-action pass game. Cousins is that kind of quarterback. You know, these two teams played a year ago when Thielen was in having his great season, and the Saints actually doubled Thielen in critical situations a year ago. Now, Thielen's back healthy, but Diggs has had the better year. I think that the defense for the Saints is a very overlooked defense because of Brees and Thomas.
Yes.
I think they have really good players at all three levels of the defense. I've been saying for 2 weeks now, and people say, wow, what a hot take, but it's not a hot take. I think DeMario Davis this season has been the best three-down linebacker in the league.
Wow. How about that? All right, finally, Philadelphia-Seattle. I think it's fitting they're playing each other because I really do. I was saying earlier, you can lie about everything in the NFL, but you can't lie about how good your coach or your quarterback is, because if they're not good, 7 of 8 divisions and arguably 8 of 8, the best head coach quarterback combo won. And a lot went wrong for Seattle and a lot went wrong for Philadelphia. But they both have good coaches and good quarterbacks, and this league rewards teams who figure those two spots out. Philadelphia's story is amazing. They're incredibly resilient. Is this kind of the end of the road, though? I mean, how much more can you get and ask of Carson Wentz?
Well, we know they're very limited talent-wise. We've been talking about that for months and months. And look, he's developed some chemistry with Greg Ward, which has been very nice. We have no idea about Zach Ertz this weekend. I don't think he's practiced yet, so he may not go again. Goddard did seem to come on a little bit, and he was a second-round pick who they really liked. But they're so limited. They don't have any vertical dimension. They have to try to orchestrate plays. Look, they orchestrated a touchdown last week on a shot play to Joshua Perkins. Those are the kinds of things they have to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's hard to go 12, 13, 14 plays in this league. Seattle, on the other hand, their offense has sort of stalled the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
Another offense that's not a lot of mystery to it. They want to run the ball, and they'll still try to run the ball. I've been impressed with Travis Homer, by the way, and in a short stretch, maybe he can be an important factor. But they've not been able to get the ball down the field. The Niners totally understood their route concepts when they went for shot plays and took it away. But they're in the same division, so they know them well. And Wilson has not made those second reaction improvisational plays in recent weeks, which I personally believe they count on.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're too Russell Wilson dependent. That's what it feels like to me. I mean, what'd you make of the Marshawn Lynch stuff? Did you see anything you like?
I thought he looked like Marshawn Lynch. I mean, and I'm anxious to see him this week because I still think he's going to get carries. And it's funny you say that about Russell Wilson. They're not dependent on him structurally with their offense. Their offense is run-based. Where I think they're dependent on him is I do believe they expect and count on those second reaction plays. But as far as how their offense is built and structured, it's not structured around Russell Wilson.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That's the game I can't wait to watch, and a lot of people are poo-pooing it, saying, oh, these teams are limited. I cannot wait. I think you have great coaches in Seattle and Philly. I think you have really big-time quarterback talents. I think the resilience of both teams is impeccable. I think Philadelphia and Seattle, my gut feeling says Seattle. I think it's funny. I just kind of feel like Seattle, they're very good on the road. I just think Philadelphia I just think you can't squeeze any more juice here.
It's possible. See, I was very surprised at Seattle's game on Sunday night.
So was I.
I thought they would win that game. I thought that would be one of those games where they would win, and they didn't. And the Niners pretty much dominated. I know it went down to the end, but we'll see. I mean, Philly, I think where Philly has a major advantage, and they have to, in my view, dominate in this area, is on the defensive line versus the offensive line. And I think Philly needs to control that part of the line of scrimmage.
Greg Cosell, 40 years NFL Films. Thanks, Greg.
All right, Colin. Appreciate it. Thanks.